sports talk for real sports fans. It's Jimmy B and TC. Here's Jim and Trent.
All right, everybody, we are back. Second hour as we roll all the way to 6 o'clock right here on the Big Talker 1700. Always fun when Seth Gruen comes on the show. Bleacher Report, Big Ten Unfiltered. We can talk to Seth about a myriad of topics, and we always do. He joins us right now on 1700. Hi, Seth. How are you, man?
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you again. What's going on?
Just a beautiful day in the neighborhood. We might even hit 50 degrees tomorrow, so we're all excited here, pal. Let's kind of jump into some things. If I said to you, Seth, with what you cover, Big Ten, football, everything else, right now, what would your number one story be?
Wow. That's a great question. I mean, I guess this time of year it's got to be the Hall of Fame, but to be honest with you, based on what I'm watching right now, I think it's just the underwhelming performance collectively of all our Big Ten basketball teams, and I know there's obviously some exceptions to that, but I think when you look at what the conference collectively had coming back this year, I really expected to see more teams in the top 25 and quite frankly in the top 15. I think player to player, the Big Ten has underperformed, and team to team it certainly has as well.
It's been such a crazy season, and we're going to get into baseball, and we're awaiting the announcement here of the Hall of Fame class for 2018. We'll get into that, but we'll start with the Big Ten side of things. And Michigan State, they're good. We know that. They're talented. Maybe Miles Bridges playing a bit out of position at times, trying to be a small forward when he's a college four. Maybe at the next level he's got to be a three, but here I think he's at his best at the four. The ascension of Purdue, how good they've been in Ohio State, a big surprise. But after that group, and you throw Michigan up there, you know, a huge disappointment here from our state and the Iowa Hawkeyes. A huge disappointment from your state in Northwestern. Minnesota has been just dreadful this year. A huge step back out of Wisconsin. Maryland, it's been, I think, a part because of injuries. But, you know, you mentioned these teams and what your expectation level was here. It's everything kind of combining together to make this down Big Ten this season. But is this something long-term? Is there something bigger here in your mind? Or is it just a one-year blip that happens from time to time?
No, I think it's a one-year blip that happens every maybe decade or so, to be honest with you, with the Big Ten. Usually, you know, the Big Ten's, you know, one of the two best basketball conferences in the country in a given year. You know, they usually jockey with the ACC for that, you know, for that spot, for that top spot. You know, obviously you mentioned a lot of teams there. I think you expected Wisconsin to take a step back, even though they got Ethan Happ back. They lost a lot from last year's team. I don't know that I expected them to play this poorly, but nonetheless expected them to take a step back. As far as Minnesota is concerned, to me that one's the real head-scratcher. I think you saw them last year when with defense they have not played consistently on that end of the floor this year, and they also have a guy who I think should be a bona fide National Player of the Year candidate, Jordan Murphy. Mm-hmm. So I'm really confused as to why they haven't put it together. I don't know if some of the off-the-court stuff, whether you talk about you know, the sexual harassment allegations that kind of surrounded the team a couple of weeks ago, and what's happened with, obviously, Richard Pitino's father off the court. They've had a lot to deal with. It's hard to put your finger on it, but they're certainly underwhelmed. Yeah, Northwestern is probably the shock of the conference. I think there were people out there who thought Northwestern was a bona fide Final Four team. And by the way, I should mention that I should be using some crow because I thought Minnesota was a bona fide Final Four team. But when you look at Northwestern, I just think they're deficient really in every area this year. In every area that they excelled last year, they've taken a step back this year with the exception of their free throw shooting. So that, to me, has been a real head-scratcher as well. And then I think, you know, all the other teams you met, Maryland certainly has caught the injury bug. I forgot the other teams that you mentioned, but it just seems like everybody's taken a step back this year, with the exception of Ohio State, which might be the big surprise nationally, and, of course, Purdue and Michigan State, who are both national championship contenders right now.
in your estimation, Purdue is the hottest team in the Big Ten right now, but are they good enough to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, Jimmy, this is a great question, because I think Purdue tends to go unheralded no matter what they do, and that's partially because they're in West Lafayette, which to me is the worst Big Ten city. I think it's also the fact that you watch Purdue, and they never look all that impressive. You know, they don't run up and down the floor like a lot of the elite teams. I still believe that this year's Purdue team could get upset by a team that's a little more athletic and gives them some problems. But what a credit to the job that Matt Painter has done. I mean, you lose Caleb Swanigan, and really you should take a step back, and I think this team is actually better this year. So, you know, he has just as good an argument as anybody in the country for that National Coach of the Year award. Now, I talked about that on the podcast. I think Chris Holtmann actually has the edge, but Matt Painter has done a phenomenal job.
Carson Edwards has taken a big step forward this year. Vince Edwards, I've always enjoyed his game, and they find these unheralded guys, and they become just prominent, solid Big Ten players. But, I mean, we go all the way back to the Gene Katie years. It's all well and good, and they win Big Ten titles, but breaking through and get to that Final Four. You know, on the other side, the Big Ten, even in a down year, I think the perception will change of Michigan State can win the whole thing, win a national title. They're not playing at that level, though. Michigan State is not close to playing at a national championship level. What needs to happen for the Spartans to get back to what a lot of people thought they were going to be before the year?
Yeah, you know, I think we see this every year with Michigan State. I don't know that a blue blood program has more ebb and flow to it. I don't know if there's a blue blood program in the country that has more ebb and flow to it than the Spartans. You know, we always talk at the beginning of the year, they schedule really, really difficult non-conference opponents. A lot of times they lose, they fall in the rankings, and then teams like come March, they're right there contending for the Final Four. You know, what needs to happen on the court? You know, I think they need to use their length and athleticism a little bit better. I'd like to see this team get out and run even more than it does. I know that's not really traditionally necessarily how they've played. I know that when they won a national championship back in 2000, they were great in the half court. You know, obviously with the Flintstones and everything like that, and Morris Peterson was just such a good slasher that, you know, when you have a great player like that who's so good off the ball, you know, you're going to want to settle into the half court. But I think, you know, when you look at Miles Bridges, Jaren Jackson, these lengthy big guys they have who can run the floor, they need to use that athleticism. We saw them score 80 points, I think it was 80 against Duke. I think the final score of that game was 88-80. They can score in the 80s consistently, and I think they need to do that. And I know that they've, you know, kind of Tom Izzo has staked his claim on playing solid defense, rebounding the basketball, and hasn't really been overwhelmingly concerned with the number that his team's putting up. But they can score in the 80s and even the 90s on some nights, and I think that's how they need to beat teams.
Having a great conversation with Seth Gruen right now as we're talking a little Big Ten basketball. You mentioned Northwestern and their debacle that they are having. Where is Tim Miles and Nebraska in all of this? It seems that they pull off an upset and then they get beat the next night. I'm just kind of curious, is he still on the edge of a hot seat, or have things cooled off?
I don't know. I think you got to consider what the expectations are for Nebraska basketball. Obviously, that's a football school. I think everybody listening to the show right now knows that. Basketball doesn't get a ton of love there, but he's done a good job. They have that new facility. I think that they expected that to upgrade the program, and I think he actually is the guy there. You know, he's congenial, he's likable. I think he has an ability to recruit. He's recruited particularly Chicago very, very well. Obviously, Omaha is not a beacon for basketball talent, so he's gotten players there. I think, Jimmy, as you alluded to, it's a question of consistency. You know, do I think that he should get another year after this year? Has he done enough? Yeah, I do think so. And look, given how weak the Big Ten is, the one thing that that does allow is it allows a team like Nebraska potentially to get hot, string some wins together, and all of a sudden look like a bona fide tournament team.
Talking right now, Seth Gruen, Big Ten Unfiltered is the podcast. You can find that out there on your favorite listening device. He also writes on baseball over at BleacherReport.com. Seth, want to jump into the baseball here while we have a couple minutes left with you, waiting the official inductions as they're happening right now on MLB Network. But before we see them, who do you think is going to get in here today?
Well, I think Chipper Jones for sure, and probably Jim Thome. I think, you know, when you look at some of the unofficial polling of voters, it's revealed that collectively they don't believe Jim Thome was associated with performance-enhancing drugs of any kind. And you never really heard any rumblings about it if you've ever stood next to him. And I have. He's a big guy. He looks like a guy who can hit home runs. So I think, you know, you look at those two guys, and they're probably shoe-ins to get in. Chipper Jones, by the way, Hall of Fame player on the field. Hall of Fame quote in the locker room, too. What an eloquent, phenomenal speaker, which I know people in our business certainly appreciate. And then, you know, as far as some question marks, I think you go back to some of the steroids guys. And it's a conversation every year, you know, about Barry Bonds, about Roger Clemens. Will they finally get in? I think some people are loosening on that issue. Obviously, both of them are very closely linked to the steroid era, and there will forever be baseball purists who just don't want to see them in the Hall of Fame, but a lot of people feel that they've served their penance and deserve to get in, so that's always an interesting storyline. But as far as locks are concerned, I kind of hone in on Thome and Jones.
You know, you had a couple of guys last year get close, Trevor Hoffman, Vlad Guerrero.
Another one.
Are you still thinking that they're not going to get enough votes to get in?
I think Vlad Guerrero actually is going to get the nod. Trevor Hoffman, you know, you always wonder how people perceive the closer. You know, I think in this analytics era of baseball, I think, you know, when we're voting on some of the great closers now in the game, like a Kenley Jansen, for example, they're going to have an easier time getting in because that position in baseball is now just valued way more, both financially and statistically. But I think the current voters are still some of these old-era baseball writers who maybe don't embrace analytics. And Trevor Hoffman certainly isn't a guy who at least had the benefit of being covered from the perspective of analytics. Obviously, retroactively, we can look at his career that way. I think he's more of a question mark, but Vlad Guerrero, to me, is going to get in.
Vlad Guerrero, I'm right there with you. I hope the call comes for him. Now we go into the next tier, the steroid guys, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens. Where do you sit on those guys? More than likely not going to be there this year, but they are gaining a little bit of steam. Where do you sit with Bonds and Clemens?
You know, I'm certainly one of these guys who's loosened up on it. Part of me says, look, they cheated the game. They cheated. And their numbers were inflated as a result. But there's another part of me that says, even if these guys hadn't cheated, they'd be Hall of Famers. Now, are you born a Hall of Famer? No, you have to work at it. And being a Hall of Famer, I think, is about respecting the game, which those guys, I don't believe, did. But, you know, Barry Bonds, when he was in Pittsburgh, was a phenomenal player. And then went to San Francisco, and before 1998, was a phenomenal player. And then, you know, if you believe the reports, kind of after 1998, got into the performance enhancers. The answer is I really don't know, and I know that, you know, that's probably not the answer you want. I would lean towards no. I think if there are players more deserving, like a Jim Thome, like a Chipper Jones, you think did things right, were clean, then I think they deserve the nod over those guys. If it gets to a point where maybe you see some guys who just aren't as deserving, the numbers aren't there, even though they're clean, then maybe you see Clemens and Bonds get in. But I don't think it's going to happen this year.
I'm with you on the steroid guys. I still don't think that it will happen. And your prediction of Chipper Jones being a lock, he is the first nominee and elected into the class of 2018. So it is official now with Chipper Jones.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, I think he's a deserving guy when you talk about what he did for that Braves organization. You know, hands down, his ability to hit from both sides of the plate. You know, I think, you know, easily, I think, the biggest lock of this year's class.
Good stuff. Hey, Seth, as always, good catching up with you. We appreciate your time. And, well, the Big Ten basketball slate, it's been difficult to talk a lot of Big Ten hoops this year, but baseball's right around the corner. What are we, 3 weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting?
Yeah, believe it or not. In the meantime, I'm going to probably be miserable at night watching the Illini. So can't wait to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for your time today, Seth.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Seth Gruen. You can find him, the Big Ten Unfiltered podcast and Bleacher Report talking baseball. Jimmy B, the nominees are starting to come in. We'll delve into that. If not the rest of the day today, we got Zubin Mehente coming up. Maybe tomorrow we'll talk a little more baseball, though.
Okay, I'm good with that. Vlad Guerrero, who Seth mentioned, just got nominated and elected to the Hall of Fame. So he was right on with Chipper Jones and Vlad Guerrero. So next up is Zubin Mehente, ESPN. It's Jimmy B and TC on the Big Talker 1700.
Hey, it's Bill Ryder. Nice to be talking to the home crowd again in central Iowa, where I was raised, where I got married. The show is right on you, 5 to 9 p.m. weekdays on Des Moines' Big Talker, 1700 KBGG.
Hey, guys. This is Nate Adams. You want to know where to go for the best Valentine's Day gifts this year? Go to Christopher's Fine Jewelry. It's a tradition for the men in the Adams family to visit Christopher's because we trust their friendly, down-to-earth staff. No big sales pressure. They're happy to answer your questions and take the stress out of Valentine's Day shopping. Stop by Christopher's today at 3427 Merle Hay Road and tell them the Adams family sent you.
Sponsored by Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. A bad cold and flu season is upon us. The main difference between them is the flu brings fever. Be prepared with the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer, backed by more than 70 clinical studies.
Dr. Pepper Snapple Group is now filling Des Moines area positions. Dr. Pepper Snapple Group is hiring full-time merchandisers to provide high-quality merchandising support for Dr. Pepper Snapple Group brands to retail stores within an assigned territory. Apply online at dpsg.com/careers. That's dpsg.com/careers, or click the link on their website. Join the Dr. Pepper team and receive a $500 sign-on.
And welcome back, everybody. We continue to roll along. Zubin Mehente, he's a frequent guest on our program, and he joins us right now on the Big Talkers 1700. Zubin, as always, welcome to the show. The big story breaking, however, is the Olympic doctor for the women's gymnastics team and employed at Michigan State University, Larry Nassar. They threw the book at him. Like he got like anywhere from 90 to 175 years. He'll never see the light of day on the outside again. Your thoughts on this dirtbag?
Wow, I think you probably said it right. Three main points. One, I don't think there's anybody I know that I've talked to about this case that can even muster an ounce, a grain, a minuscule, what's the smallest possible word I can come up with adjective-wise to describe a level of sympathy or understanding or anything. Whatever that number is, it would be less than that with the regards to the amount of sympathy that this guy has gotten and or deserves. I think it hit a really low point for me last week when he came out and he said he couldn't listen to all the victim statements anymore because it was hurting him and it was turning into a media circus. And at that particular point, the nature of just how out of touch Dr. Nassar is and how disgraced Dr. Nassar, that really hit the nadir for me when he said he couldn't listen to it anymore, and he referred to it as if he was somehow now being victimized by all of this. That's number one. I mean, this is the creep of all creeps. Number two, I would say that Michigan State is getting a ton of criticism, and they should be. But I think one organization, and I know in the past few days, several very prominent gymnasts have come out and said this, while Michigan State deserves to get slammed, and there's a lot of questions on whether their president should stay. I know she's trying to hang on. There have been some critical comments made on both sides. I do believe that USA Gymnastics needs the eye turned to them next. I know Michigan State is where he was employed, where a lot of these incidents had happened, and they kind of turned a blind eye to it, because they're getting a ton of criticism. But USA Gymnastics was in on this from a granular level, because obviously most of these Olympians were gymnasts, and they have obviously taken the brunt of some criticism, but I definitely believe they should be held far more culpable, and they should be put in a far more harsh spotlight than they have been. Michigan State got its comeuppance. It's just a matter of time probably before USA Gymnastics gets theirs. I'm not exactly sure why they have not gotten a scathing review. You can take this the event out of the Caroli Ranch. I don't think that's going to satisfy people. I tend to think that they're be a terrible day. I know many of their people have already resigned, but I don't think that's enough either. I think they really need to be hit hard. And the third thing I would say is the person who really felt remember from this trial, besides Allie Raisman and besides all the women that it spoke and the people that it spoke, I'm really going to remember this judge. This judge was incredible in terms of how visceral, how raw she was in her condemnation of Larry Nassar. I have not seen this. I don't watch trials all day. I don't work at court TV or line news or whatever. But, like, I rarely have seen, we unfortunately do cover a lot of trials because now sports is intertwined with so much of this. I have never seen a judge in use the kind of language, and by the way, deserves, that she used on Nassar. So, one, I think he is the creep of all creeps. He's the lowest of all lows. I believe USA Gymnastics is going to eventually have to pay a much greater price than they have paid for the moment, because right now the focus is on Michigan State, but obviously that's going to shift soon enough. And the third thing is this judge and the way that she came down on Nassar. I applaud it. I've just rarely seen anything like that before, Jim.
Zubin, how about the other side with Michigan State? Obviously a lot still to come there, both inside the athletic department and the school president. But, you know, we look back to Jerry Sandusky and that scandal with Penn State and the heads that rolled after that one. Michigan State, are we going to see something similar? And why haven't we seen the same kind of vitriol that was there that we saw with Penn State?
Well, I think right now the situation is going to be, once the NCAA gets involved, which they said they now are going to, the New York Times reported last night, that the NCAA was going to open an investigation. We'll just have to wait to see what happens. We've talked about this on your show numerous times, that the NCAA has a very backlogged case schedule. They're underworked. They don't have enough people. They need more employees to ferret out all of these cases, which is part of the reason oftentimes you see kids pay the price athletically in football and basketball. Kids that were 8, 9, and 10 are paying the price for things that guys did 8, 9, 10 years before that. Now, part of that is because people don't want to talk in the moment, and when the NCAA does investigations, the more time that goes on, the more people are willing to talk because they don't feel there's much on the line. They don't feel like they can take anything away from them. You can strip people's national championships. Everybody knows Michigan went to the 1993 Final Four. You can take that banner down. Everybody knows they were there. So I think time tends to do that with the NCAA. Also, the fact that they simply just have too many cases. But much like major courts in the United States, they can expedite ruling. You know, if this is a huge case involving Penn State or this is a huge case involving Michigan State, they can basically say, all right, these other cases right now that we're working on, we're going to put them on the back burner, we're going to put them on the side, and we're going to focus on this. You see this in the U.S. court system all the time. When the Supreme Court or a judicial court or an appellate, when they decide, okay, we're going to hear this in an expedited manner because hundreds of thousands of people are being affected, or whatever the case may be, there's a large public outcry, and there could be consequences for many American citizens, or in this case, athletes, so we need to make this a priority. So I would say we would have to wait to see what they do. Obviously, with the Penn State situation, the NCAA ruled one way, pendulum kind of swung the other way, and I'm not exactly sure whether the outcome the NCAA was hoping for is what they ended up getting with Penn State, since so much of that was reversed, and now Penn State is back. Baylor still needs to see what needs to happen there. And with Michigan State, we're just so early in the process. I mean, literally yesterday the story broke that the NCAA was going to investigate. And keep in mind, it's only been about a year or so since Penn State, just to use one example that you bring up, has really been operating with a full set, quote-unquote, with 85 scholarships, without bowl restrictions. So that took years and years to adjudicate. Obviously, there was the Paterno death, and there were some raw feelings there. Baylor's situation still yet to be worked out in some capacity. So it'll be very interesting to see just how quickly they can accrue this evidence, because obviously this is a pressing case. This is a case that transcends sports. This is a case that is on every news station, not just every sports radio station and sports station in the country. So we'll have to wait to see how it's adjudicated. But even the most serious of NCAA crimes, like Penn State or Baylor or point-shaving scandals or anything like that, all of those things, because of the complexity of it, took a long time to adjudicate. So I think yesterday's news that they're going to start to investigate is just the first step in what should be a very lengthy investigation. Is it pretty clear what Michigan State did? Yeah, I think it is pretty clear. But at the end of the day, like anything, the evidence has to be accrued, and that stuff just takes time.
Zub Mahente is our guest here on the Big Talker 1700. Now to college basketball. Last night, Oklahoma knocked off Kansas, and Trae Young did not score 122 points in the game. He played in under control the entire time. Zubin, with that win and the way Trae Young played, is Oklahoma, at least in your estimation, now a team capable of being a Final Four team?
It's tough because I don't think Trae Young is going to become this sort of player. I think this was just a young kid that got a lot of heat. I mean, let's be honest, Jim. When's the last time a kid scored nearly half a hundred and got skewered? I mean, that's basically what happened here. He scored nearly a half a hundred points, and people are like, what are you doing out there? And I understand, obviously, the 39 shots and the 23s and all that. But I'll tell you what, I don't think that this is indicative of how Oklahoma wants to play. Because at the end of the day, if you take a look at the stats in the Oklahoma State game, which is the game he was criticized for, his teammates like shot worse than he did. Even though he took a ton of shots, his teammates shot worse than he did. So the argument was, if my teammates aren't making shots, I'm going to continue to take shots. Now, there are some poor shots. He turned it over seven times. Turnovers have been an issue. But I wouldn't say within one game that this is indicative of Oklahoma going to the Final Four or having Final Four capabilities, because this is an atypical game. In fact, if we were at the end of the season, Jim, say, let's take a look at all the games Oklahoma had played, I would point to last night's game as an aberration. I wouldn't point to that as some sort of turning point and say, okay, now if Oklahoma plays like this, they're going to be fine. Because the reality is Trae Young was 7-for-9 from the field, and you can't have the most explosive player in college basketball taking 9 shots a game. I understand he wanted to, quote-unquote, manage the game. That's the word he used. But I don't think that stat line, while it was much better and much more efficient than his stat line on Saturday in that Bedlam box score, I don't think they can win playing like that. If you have the best player on your team, and Trent was telling me he was calling some high school basketball last night, the best dude on either team should be taking the most shots on the team more often than not. Sometimes it's a little bit different. High school, they're playing near the box in one, all that sort of stuff. But generally speaking, Steph Curry should be taking the most shots in a Warriors game. LeBron should be taking the most shots in a Cavs game. Mm-hmm. Harden should be taking the most shots in a Rockets game. And Porzingis should be taking the most shots in a Knicks game. Last thing I would tell you, Jim, I was doing SportsCenter last night after Super Tuesday. That was the first game. Mississippi State, Kentucky is the second game. And Coach Greenberg, who I love, Coach Greenberg was on. And I said, what was the difference between Trae Young between Saturday and last night? And he said the difference was he just was energized and empowered. And he put more emphasis on the latter term, empowered. Because the difference between Ben Simmons and Markel Fultz and Trae Young, let's say all three of them go number one. I mean, I don't exactly know. Maybe Bagley translates a little bit better than Young. But we do know Simmons and Fultz went one. None of those guys made their teams better. I mean, Ben Simmons never played in a postseason game. They didn't make the tournament. They declined the NIT. Markel Fultz wasn't even close to playing in the NIT. I'm not blaming these guys, by the way. But Trae Young is similar to them. Incredible talent that plays on a great team. And what Greenberg said was, you got to empower your teammates. There's this other kid on Oklahoma. I don't know if you guys have watched him. His name is Brady Manick. He's from Hara, Oklahoma. He is like two, maybe one notch below Trae Young. But because he's not Trae Young, he doesn't get a lot of attention. He's a fantastic player. They have a kid named McNeese. They have a kid named Latin. They have some really good players. And what Greenberg was saying was, listen, kid, we want you taking the most shots. And when the game is on the line, you should take the shots. But empower the rest of your teammates to know that we have a great team and you got to put the ball in their hands once in a while. And he did that last night.
So we see Tony Bennett's group at Virginia ranked number 2. They get Duke over the weekend. Another impressive performance out of them. We got Arizona. The reason I bring both those teams up is because their head coaches, Tony Bennett and Sean Miller at Arizona, are called the best coaches to never get it done. Can never break through. We saw Gonzaga and Mark Few finally break through a year ago. Is this the year that we see either or neither Virginia, Tony Bennett, Sean Miller at Arizona get through and get to a Final Four?
It could be tough. I think Miller, I don't know if you agree, Trent, I think Miller has actually had that designation on it more than Bennett, only because, and I think Tony's a great coach, only because his recruiting has been like off the charts.
Yes.
I mean, obviously Duke is now propelled to the top. Kentucky used to be Duke. Kentucky is now, I would say, a notch below Duke, although still excellent. And then I think you have Kansas. And then I think Arizona's in that group. I think you have Duke as a clear number one. Kentucky is nipping at their heels. And then you have, like, Kansas and Arizona and occasionally UCLA. But, like, I don't put Virginia in that class of teams that recruits the way the teams I just mentioned. So I think Miller is going to get a little bit more criticism in terms of being the best that's never gotten there, because his recruiting, since he has gotten there, has been outstanding, and they haven't been able to get there. So I think I would probably put Miller in that class before I would put Tony Bennett. I actually think a guy like Chris Mack also probably deserves to be on that list. That's another guy nobody will ever talk about, but a guy that I think probably deserves to be close to the top of the list as well. As for Virginia, it's so interesting. You know, I was last night, once again, we were doing the highlights, and I'm like, amazing. Clemson scored 36 points. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Clemson's a top 20 team. Like, Clemson is a good team. I've watched Clemson this year. But it remains to be seen whether that style can work in the tournament. Last year, if I'm not mistaken, Trent, Virginia scored in an NCAA tournament game 39 points. I think they lost to Florida. They scored 39 points in a second-round game and were eliminated. And again, they play great defense. But I don't know if they have like a Malcolm Brogdon-type player. I think you could lock down people all day long, and I get that, and they can do it like nobody else. But they just have got to show me a little bit more offensive firepower. And I don't think that's like a groundbreaking statement. They'll lock anybody down, but they do at times struggle to score. And occasionally they're going to get themselves into a track meet. They're going to play a team that's super long, that can get a bunch of transition points. They might get frustrated by Virginia in the half court in the pack line defense. But there are a couple of times during the game where they're going to get a long rebound and fire it out, and Virginia's not going to be able to get back on transition D. They're going to play a team that does that. They're going to play a team that can throw outlet passes and can swing up and down the floor easy. And so it remains to be seen under this system, which is brilliant, whether that can end up getting it done. As for Arizona, I mean, I think some of Miller's comments this year have been pretty eyebrow-raising. Now, they certainly have turned a corner a little bit, but I don't think he is exuding a ton of confidence. Remember, this is the same guy that said not too long ago he's wondering how he can get his guys to play hard for him. Now, again, that could have been something he said to get his team riled up through the press, and, you know, people have been accused of doing that before, but I'm not sure that's the approach you take with 18- to 22-year-old people. I think you do that more in the NBA, Jim. I don't know if you concur. You can push buttons a little easier with men in the NBA. I'm not sure you do that with college students. Not the best way to get through to them, especially guys that might only be with you 1 year, and as soon as they sour, they'll be ready to bail anyway because they got their NBA cash waiting for them. So I would actually bet against both of them making a trend.
Zubin, let's switch to the NFL. We had the NFC and AFC championship games last weekend. We haven't talked to you since those games were played. Your thoughts on those two games, and should this be a good Super Bowl matchup, Philly and New England?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be great because I think on the one hand, you've got the one player that any casual fan could recognize. Now, I've been on record. I talked about this with Ken and Trent the other day. The Super Bowl, I don't know if you concur, Jim. I mean, the Super Bowl is just an event that, I mean, you could literally take one team out of the AFC, one team out of the NFC, put them all in a hat, pick one and one, and the game's still going to get 100 million viewers because there's still way many more people that watch the Super Bowl that have never watched a football game all year versus the people that watch football like you and me and Trent and your listeners every week. I mean, they don't know that Blake Bortles isn't good, or they don't know that Blake Bortles finally had a good year. I mean, the overwhelming majority of people watching the game have never watched a game all season. So I think the Super Bowl has gotten to a point where it's not going to matter who's playing. I think from a storyline perspective, to be honest with you, I think Jacksonville would have been a great story. It would have been like the Cubs, obviously not that much torture, but a team that like nothing's kind of gone right to them. It would have been the NFL's biggest surprise Super Bowl team in decades. I can't think of another team that would have rocketed that way that people would have talked about. But at least of the four teams, there is one player that all casual fans know, and all I think most people know, not even just sports fans, and that's Brady, so you got him. And I think the story with the Eagles or the Vikings would have been great. Obviously, the Vikings have had tons of Super Bowl turmoil, but I think the Eagles are interesting. You know, keep in mind, in the NFC East, and it's interesting because, you know, you always talk about the NFC East. I grew up out here. I live out here. The Giants have won multiple Super Bowls. The Cowboys have won multiple Super Bowls. The Redskins have won three Super Bowls. I think Dallas has won five. The Giants have won four, whatever it is. The Eagles have won none. And every other team in the division has not just won the Super Bowl once, they've won it multiple times. Also hard to explain how much of an institution, I know, Jim, you traveled around the country doing games forever, how much of an institution the Eagles are in that city. And don't get me wrong, they love the Phillies, and they loved Allen Iverson, he embodied the city, and the Flyers had their day with the Broad Street Bullies. The Eagles are just on a different plane, and they've been waiting and waiting and waiting. And I think the best story for me out of everything is the fact that Nick Foles is basically ready to retire. I was watching Football Night in America before the wild card game against the Falcons, or the divisional game, excuse me, against the Falcons. And he basically told, like, Mike Tirico, like, yeah, you know, I was ready to go, man. Nothing was happening with the Rams. Nothing was happening with the Chiefs. I had that year where I threw 27 touchdowns and two picks with Chip, and nothing really went right after that, subsequent to that. I was ready to walk away and talk to his wife and said, let's go. We're done. And that guy is four quarters away. No matter what happens, that guy is four quarters away from being in Super Bowl lore. A guy that was ready to just walk away from the sport is four quarters away from being remembered as one of the most memorable fill-in performances in Super Bowl history. Jim, it'll be up there with Hostetler. It'll be up there with Earl Morrill. It'll be up there with Brady taking over for Bledsoe. If he can get it done, he's going to be in that elite group. And for a guy that was ready to just say, you know what, let's see what the next chapter holds beyond football, that's a pretty amazing spot to be, I think.
Zubin Mehente, ESPN. Zubin, out of time for today. Always great catching up. Thanks for your time, as always.
See you next week, guys. Thanks.
Zubin Mehente checking in with us, Jimmy B. We got to take a break here. We'll come back. And Jimmy B, I'm going to get your pick for the game tonight. Drake playing for first place in the MVC. And we're talking about, we're getting to the end of January. Last week in January, Jimmy B.
Yeah.
And they're playing to be alone in first place. We'll get Jimmy B's pick on the other side. I'll give you my thoughts. I got a couple of college games I like tonight. Picks on the other side. No, not football picks, but they're basketball. And it's always fun. Quick time out. Back with more on the other side. It's Jimmy B and TC. And we are back one final time. We'll take you up to 6 o'clock here. A couple minutes left to go, Jimmy B. And tonight, first place on the line in the Knapp Center. Here comes Loyola, a team that went on the road. They played in the Ozone against the Gators. A different environment tonight. What kind of crowd do you expect on hand at the Knapp Center this evening?
Trent, I would hope that Drake fans show up. I really do. I hope that they just don't have 3,000 people there, and that's it. This is a monster game. And this hasn't happened in, like, how long now? Like, years. Eons. So you better go down there if you're a fan of Drake, or if you're just a fan of college basketball and you want to watch a game tonight. The Knapp Center is the place to go, and I love Drake in this environment. Look, I know that Loyola Chicago's favored, and I get it, but I love Drake in this environment. I think my boy Reed Timmer's going to have a monster game tonight. And I just think that at home, this team is really pretty good. And if they get 4,000 or 5,000 people in that building, it's loud. You've been there. You know that. And the fan support would be absolutely, truly beneficial for this team if the players feel like they are starting to maybe recapture the excitement that is Drake basketball. And coming absolutely out of nowhere, Trent, I'm going to go with Drake tonight. Where are you?
I'm with the Bulldogs as well. They've been very good at home. A couple losses on the road to Valpo and to you and I. But at home, they've been very good. This Loyola team, pretty talented. But I'm going with the Doggies tonight. And another thing, Jimmy B, the other MVC game tonight, you and I, Illinois State. I mentioned this to Ken earlier. How in God's name is you and I favored by 7.5 against anybody right now? The way that they, you know, struggled off at 7.5. Okay,
yeah,
they were a slight favorite. I buy that 3.5, 4. Yeah, I could get into that, but certainly not at the level that we see there at 7.5. So I'm going to take Illinois State with my other pick. With that, we are out of time. Thanks everybody out there for listening in. As always, great talking with the people out there. Big thank you to Zuba Mahente for joining us today. Seth Gruen from Big Ten Unfiltered Podcast. We talked a little Big Ten hoops with him. And, of course, Bleacher Report on Major League Baseball with the Hall of Fame inductions. And Chris Dobertine. We talked some college basketball and some brackets with him earlier in the program. If you miss any portion of the show, you can always catch us on the podcast page. Just go over to 1700kbgg.com or just search Jimmy B and TC. We'll pop up there, the podcast, each and every evening for you and give you something to listen to throughout the day. You can also catch myself and Ken Miller and our podcast as well with that. We'll be back tomorrow, myself and Ken Miller from noon until 2, and then Jimmy B and TC from 4 until 6 o'clock. We will come back with you tomorrow. Enjoy the college basketball tonight. Some good ones on hand, we mentioned in the MVC, and I promised one other game that I like tonight. I like Wyoming. Yeah, that's right, Wyoming. They're getting 4.5 at home against a top 25 team in Nevada, talented team. I like the Cowpokes tonight. There's my little bundle of love for you, giving you 3 picks tonight. Drake, Illinois State, and Wyoming. Take it and run. Probably the opposite direction. That'll do it for today. Back at it tomorrow. Enjoy your sports night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow here on 1700 KBGG.